Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Chris Hutrup, the CEO of Online Carry Training. Good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Another nice day here in San Francisco. What's it like where you are?
It's cold, snowy, and cloudy.
Wow.
Up in your Minneapolis, but it's supposed to be nice going forward, starting later this afternoon. So, glasses half full.
Hopefully it stays like that for a while. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, you know, I'm kind of a serial entrepreneur. So my first company was when I was 8. My sister was 10. We had a cotton candy stand because there were too many lemonade stands in our neighborhood. So we kind of did the blue ocean strategy there. Basically took that little itty bitty company, grew it, and made enough money that summer where my sister bought a horse. So that was kind of the first bout of entrepreneurship in my life and everything. And then from there, I grew up. I always had lawn care companies or brush removal companies in my teens. And we ended up going to school to Northwestern, not the Northwestern Chicago, but one in St. Paul. And after graduating from there, I sold life insurance for Northwestern Mutual. And I made a lot of money for about a year, but I just got bored. With it. So on the side for fun, I started teaching here in Minnesota some educational courses around firearms training for people who wanted to learn how to safely use them and own them and everything, and quickly grew that company in about a month to the point where I was making more money on the side for fun teaching these classes than I was all month in my day job. So I took that company and grew it kind of what it is today, which is one of the largest firearms training companies in the country, Online Carry Training. We operate in about 34 states, teach a plethora of courses, but primarily around permit to carry or concealed carry in some states is what they call it. And basically from there, went out and got feedback from a lot of our students that this was 2012, mid-2012, that they were having trouble finding ammunition for shooting. So on the side, you kind of started exploring that and said, well, you know, there must be a way to try to figure out to jump the supply chain, because there was a big increase in demand. And basically went out there and started an ammunition manufacturer, raised capital from a fantastic investor who's still a friend of mine and everything, and basically broke into a niche of the ammunition industry that primarily targeted, no pun intended, government contracts for the U.S. military, specifically in precision calibers. So long distance or niche, weird, oddball stuff. And then we exited that business about three and a half years ago now. And then from there, started a retail business, started a tech company, started a service-based company with my brother and everything. Or I should say I helped him out. He did a great job on his own. And then finally from there, I went out and moved on to a medical device and working inside of a medical device startup and everything. So that's kind of the gist of it. I was joking around saying professionally ADD, because I do a little bit of everything, but you know, I really enjoy doing the startup phase of companies. So getting in there, building the team out, which is really the key factor of success of any company, is having a good team. And then growing that from there and getting good people involved. And I'm currently involved in an accelerator that I helped found and everything. And we're working, you know, with startups and everything outside of that, trying to take away some of those risk factors, but also augment things a little bit differently. So Space Accelerator, based here in Minneapolis, where, you know, I'm currently doing a lot of projects at and everything, is kind of an interesting venture for sure. So, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a lot. You're a busy guy. Yeah. And it, from the sounds of it, you've only been an employee for about a year. Is that correct?
Yeah, we only worked for someone for about a year. That, and I was, when I was 14, I worked at a golf course driving those little carts that pick up the balls in the driving range. Mm-hmm. After a season of that, I was too jittery from people trying to hit me in it with the golf balls that I just went on my own, I guess. So, but it's been fun, you know. It's what I was, you know, kind of created to do and made to do. So it's kind of fun to sort of live that calling, you know, every day. So
And I have to admit, being a golfer, I have tried to hit the golf cart guy. I don't anymore. I matured a little, but there was a time in my life where yes, I did that. So what has been your experience with remote employment? And it sounds like you've had it in various capacities in your career.
Yeah, so that's what's kind of interesting, right? So a lot of the companies that I founded or worked with, you know, you're typically bootstrapping things, right? And when you look at any given market, like, there's pros and cons to going out there and using remote work. You know, one of the big pros, though, is that, you know, the probability of, you know, the talent that you need in your geographical area is relatively low compared to the rest of the world, right? Especially when you're looking at, like, up here in Minneapolis, it's a very competitive market for developers, right? It's really hard to find good developers who are looking for work, right? They can get a job in 2 seconds. But if I go out there and I can work with, you know, a developer in Argentina, or I can work with a developer team in India, and they're 1/3 or 1/10 the price of a developer here, it allows you to get a lot more traction on that. You can move things faster. You know, you can work with teams in different time zones, so you can keep things rolling out and kind of daisy chaining them. So there's a lot of pros to it. You know, the downside is they're not on site, right? So there's negatives to that, but I think some of those barriers are starting to be broken. And a lot of that's, you know, accelerated by kind of the coronavirus pandemic and everything.
Yeah, I think it's actually made it more acceptable for people. People are more willing to accept remote work now. And so just by the nature of that, they're looking for solutions. And just because people like 2 years ago would say, nah, that won't work for us, right? And now it's like, well, we've been doing it now by default, and it does work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, like, humanity's ability to adapt to situations is you know, kind of unprecedented, right? Like, our ability to, you know, work inside of a certain framework is it's kind of amazing, right? So it's like, I had a number of entrepreneur friends of mine who own businesses, you know, 40, 50, 60 employees. And, you know, one of them was very much so, you know, liking to have his, you know, employees on site there every day, show up, wear suits, the whole nine yards. Well, they weren't able to do that for the past 6 months, and he's having the best year he's ever had. Right.
Yeah.
Now, is that directly due to, you know, them working remotely? Probably not, but it goes to show that they can perform at a higher level than they ever have before, because, or even with working remotely, you know. But it really does come down, I think, to the individual employee. I mean, some people, you know, can do it, and some people can't do it, and some people shouldn't do it. Right. I think those are three different things, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I think it does come down to the individual. I've been doing it for over 10 years. So to me, it's second nature. But to other people, I mean, other people were thrust into it. If you have little kids at home, and it's very hard. Mm-hmm. But I mean, my youngest is 30, so that's really not an issue. So what do you think is the future of remote employment? And what do you think can be done differently to make it more effective?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think the biggest crux with remote employment from a owner or an entrepreneur perspective, right, is the fear that someone's going to be working remote and they're not going to be doing their job, right? So it's really that accountability factor. And it really comes down to management, right? Like, how can you manage that person better? And, you know, I'll caveat this by saying that there are some people they just can't work remotely, right? You know, a big thing is you have to trust the person. You know, you have to know that they're going to do their job, and they want to do their job, and they want to be there. You know, I'm guessing if we look back, you know, probably at employees who, you know, were kind of on their way out psychologically, they probably have used, you know, some of this work remote as kind of their way to sort of sit back and relax while some of the stuff has happened. You know, on the other side of the equation, some people are very capable, right? They're driven, they're motivated. And frankly, those are the employees you want anyways, right? You don't want dead weight on your team that you're paying to sit around there and babysit. So that's the caveat. But I think, you know, really to answer your question, like, what does that future kind of look like? Is I think you're going to see an increase. I think some of this stuff is going to stick. And a lot of these companies who are paying for Class A office space, you know, they're paying $20, $30, $40, $50 a square foot, you know, for these beautiful offices. They're realizing, oh, we don't need to do that. You know, that goes right back to the bottom line, especially in a small to medium-sized company, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have some of these really big companies, you know, up here in Minneapolis, like Medtronic, And they're basically almost their entire workforce, and they have like over 200,000 employees or something like that are working remotely if they can work remotely, right? Like manufacturing, you can't, but if you have a, an office job, they're doing that, right? So it'd be interesting to see, what ripples are created further inside like the real estate industry. Is Class A office space going to crater, as a result of that? Or are there going to be companies that say, you know what, like we could work remote. Why are we worried about hiring someone here in Minneapolis? And, one of my friends basically asked himself that question. He owns a business, and his big thing was like, it's so much easier now to go out there and recruit. So, Minneapolis is probably a medium to upper medium standard of living from an expense perspective. You're in San Francisco, which is a lot higher, but, imagine if you could find a high quality person, but they live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That person, compared to someone who lives in Manhattan or San Francisco, might need to make half as much as you do, because they have such, much cheaper cost of living. So from a budgetary perspective, you're saving money now on your rent, so you don't have to pay, rent to get that high expense. And then number two, you're seeing the ability to save money on the personnel. That could be obviously very crucial for big companies, but I think in small business, you're going to see that be the big norm, because most people have always had that mantra like where they consider it and they say, oh, I'm just going to dismiss this idea of working remotely because for some reason it's not going to work. People are going to be lazy. They're not going to do their job. Well, they just all been forced to do it for the past 6 months for the most part, or a lot of people have. And I think that's going to start breaking that status quo. And it's, frankly, a good thing, right? It's almost this creative destruction where, areas that may have been, kind of pseudo economically depressed are going to get this influx in revenue because, in the middle of Iowa or in the middle of Nebraska, this person's making $150,000 a year as a developer when normally he had to drive to Omaha and he's making 95, right? So it brings that inside there. It's not so much about just getting money and redistributing it by any means. It's more so about creating competition in the market. So now, a business owner can be more profitable or more competitive inside that market. They can charge less for their product or service, which then gets passed on to the end user at the end of the day, the end customer, right? If you own a point of sale company and it's cheaper for you to run and cheaper for your competitor to run, it means it's going to be cheaper for, mom and pop retail store to have that product, and that means more money in their pocket at the end of the day. So, it's just kind of this ripple effect that's created by there, and ultimately you want to, create competition. And I think this helps break down the barriers and open up more competition to the market. So
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting you mentioned Sioux Falls. I'm actually consulting for a company now, part-time. I have to lead developers out of Sioux Falls. The company that I'm consulting for is based in Irvine, California. So and literally, if the guy were to leave, it would be devastating to the company. He's really talented. He's doing a great job. So I know what you mean. It's absolutely true. And who would have thought it? 10 years ago, right? Someone in Irvine, like, I'm going to hire someone in South Dakota. No way. So what is the story behind online carry training? And you said you've been in business for what, since 8 years now?
Yeah, 8 years now. So really, I mean, the main story behind it is that, when we started teaching classes, we were limited on how many of these classes we could teach. So we kind of one of the first companies to go out there and start doing online training for firearms. There's a number of states where you can actually do that. And obviously we always recommend like, hey, go out there and get, in-person instruction. And then at the end of the day, it's, if someone wants to do this permit, and get that, we just want to provide them the best way to do that. Right. So we also offer like instructor resources and stuff like that. So they can get the in-person piece. But primarily we actually do a lot of our training virtually to be able to give people some of the basic level instructions. There's some things you just can't learn on a video, and we don't really offer courses in that area. We always refer that out. But it's kind of a it's an interesting business for sure, around there. And it's worked pretty well for us. And we've had a really good team. And a lot of our team members actually have been remote, right? So, I've had team members that worked in a company from India to Spain to Pennsylvania. At the end of the day, it's like the way that the company is structured and we built it from the ground up was allowed for that, right? And it's just a matter of how good of a manager am I or my team at making sure that, you know, we're still moving those projects forward and we're getting everything done that we need to. But we've had a lot of success with that. You know, we've probably saved, I'd say, 30 to 40% consistently, as opposed to having to hire people locally here in the Minneapolis market. And on top of that, there's, you know, some things that we need to have done that there isn't the talent for it here in Minnesota. You know, like, you know, find specialists in these, you know, small niche pieces of software that we were developing. Like, there's 20 people in the world, you know, or 100 people in the world, right, who have experience in that, right? So it's easier to work with those folks than try to find a development shop here. They have no experience and you're basically trying to, you know, get them to learn on your dollar and everything. So it's nice to be able to kind of go remote on that. And in fact, you know, one of our gals is based out of Arizona, you know, who does a lot of our consulting on the IT side of the equation, because that's what she specializes in, is this particular, you know, specific piece of software that we utilize. She's very good at, and she's about one third the price of a normal developer. You know, that we would get here, because she's in rural Arizona, you know, so it's great.
Makes sense. And just out of curiosity, what percentage of Carrie, you know, can someone learn online? I mean, as you said, some of it you have to do in person, but what percent can you do online before you have to go to the in-person thing?
Sure. So there's a number of states where you can do it entirely online. And that is, you know, so let's use an example here. So like, you know, Alaska, right? So Alaska, each state makes up their own rules around concealed carry licenses, right? You know, Alaska, you know, is what's known as a constitutional carry state, which basically means that they don't have to even have a license. You can carry and you don't need a license. It's just, it's assumed it's part of the Constitution. Arizona is the exact same way a lot of states are. So there's a number of states that don't even require any training whatsoever, right? And then there's other states that require a ton of training. And there's some states who ultimately it's almost impossible to actually get a license, even if you were, you know, on SEAL Team 6 and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Because there's a, you know, and at the end of the day, that's their prerogative. It's their state. They can choose what they want to do. You know, I'm very laissez-faire, you know, in those types of things. So, but yeah, there's a number of states you can do it online. There's a number of states like here in Minnesota, where I'm from, where you basically can do your classroom portion online, and then you come and we do an in-person shooting test with an instructor who's certified, and they walk you through everything. And there are some states that require 100% in person. So it just depends on the state on what we do, but it's on a very state-by-state basis. But it's been kind of fun building that out, and we've had that built out for years and everything. We've put tens of thousands of people through our courses, which is great. We're the largest in the country and everything. But yeah, the other day, it's just giving people that opportunity to sort of build out that portion of their skills, right? You know, and you know, we're not forcing it upon anyone. It's just more so their choice, and we just want to give them an opportunity to do that, right? So yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. The pandemic forced everybody to go remote back in March. And then we also have an election year. I mean, what effect has that had on your business, those two things coming together?
Oh, sure, yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, becoming like a perfect storm here. So, you know, usually the firearms industry and everything, the training industry and, you know, a lot of other aspects of that work the opposite of normal economic conditions, right? So in down economies, we actually do better, right? In times of uncertainty, we typically do better. And in times of, you know, political kind of elections and stuff, we do better. And at the end of the day, you know, the psychology, you know, that people have and what motivates them to do these courses. And we don't do any advertising to try to push people over or any type of fear advertising. But people get concerned. And I think some people get fearful about what's going to happen, right? So during the pandemic, you know, in March, we started seeing a pretty significant spike in our business, right? And what that basically came from and was driven by was, you know, individuals who, you know, you can't find toilet paper on the store shelves. Food is hard to find on the shelves in some places. And, you know, I think people are concerned over civil unrest, right? Like, if people can't get food, are they going to come to my house and try to get that? So, you know, that's when our training spiked there, you know. And then there was, you know, obviously various things of civil unrest and whatnot. It started in May, actually, here in Minneapolis. A lot of peaceful protests, of course, you know, but, you know, I think when people started seeing some buildings burn, they got concerned for their family's safety and their own safety. Mm-hmm. So a lot of individuals, we saw another spike there who, you know, wanted to be able to protect themselves, right? And you can see that nationally, you know, if you look at the number of background checks for gun purchases, right? You see these, you know, a little bit of a spike during the pandemic, and then you see a big spike in May. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of sustained now through the, you know, up to the election here, and depending on how much direction it goes, you know, people are concerned they might lose their ability to own a gun. You might see, you know, more people trying to get that now and hopefully be grandfathered in. And the opposite can happen if they don't have that concern. So it's kind of a little bit of a roller coaster in the market and everything. And at the end of the day, we're just trying to service our you know, customers to be able to try to give them the most access, you know, possible, especially with, you know, customers who are, you know, higher risk, right? Being able to do a class online and get your license in some states, they'll let you do it through the mail now, which is really, really nice. A lot, you know, we service, you know, a large portion of the country who can do it entirely online now and entirely through the mail to get their license. So it's been nice for, I think, people who are high risk for coronavirus. You're like, hey, I don't really want to go out, you know, and drive downtown to a sheriff's office or spend, you know, 6 to 8 hours in the classroom. I'd rather do this, you know, course online in a couple of hours and then, you know, get my permit through the mail and everything, you know? So I think it's been a nice advantage for them to be able to do that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, this has been quite interesting, Chris. I want to thank you for your time today. And I wish you good luck, and hopefully your business continues to flourish, but I think you probably could use a little bit of a break soon.
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we got a week to go. Things might settle down in a week. We'll see.
Yeah, you never know, right? So at the end of the day, you know, it's you got to make hay while the sunshine and everything. Yeah. You know, not in a greedy sense or anything like that, but you never know what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, we just want to make sure that we're doing a good job, you know, servicing clients. And, you know, like you're saying, at the end of the day, like being able to have a flexible workforce, you know, not domestically or domestically, you're remotely ultimately, is kind of a really nice advantage to be able to contract and, you know, grow with you know, these micro changes inside of the market, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, well, thanks again and have a great day.
Thanks. Have a great one, Mark.